What the ultimate goal is, physical freedom. I just don't think you should have to trick tissue into more range of motion before using it through that range of motion.
One of the things that I think is a misconception, and we talked about it, is that people may go to this course thinking that, hey, I'm the Tin Man, I'm going to come out looking like Hunter. Is that the goal? Is that reality? What is that?
I am more naturally flexible than the average guy, and there's no doubt about that. Learning how to assess and seeing what the needs of the person are in front of you instead of pushing what you like on them will be a big game changer for a lot of trainers out there.
The mustache.
You are not your x-ray. You are not your MRI.
Is it possible to prevent injury?
No!
Oh, God!
No!
A podcast designed to help you change your mindset and your life.
It is time for something new.
Join host Dr. Shante Cofield, also known as the Movement Maestro, on a journey to see the bigger picture.
Open your eyes.
Find your passion.
And discover how movement unites us all.
Let's get it poppin'.
This is Maestro on the Mic. I'm the Maestro, and you're about to get maestro-fied.
3, 2, 1.
Hey guys, Maestro here, coming at you live with a truly live, but not really, live in person episode with the Hunter Cook. You guys may not even know his last name. I don't think I knew it for like maybe till like a week ago. You guys probably know him as Hunter Fitness. He's doing incredible things on the interwebs and social media with his body, and I knew that I needed to meet him at some point. We DM each other a lot. We talk a lot. But I never actually got to meet him in person. And he was kind enough to drive up to Hermosa. We're on the pier right now. It's a beautiful day. You guys should be jealous. There's palm trees out. We just had an amazing lunch. And I want you to hear his story. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Mr. Hunter.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be up here.
Have you guys ever heard his voice before? I'm going to give you guys a second.
Probably not. Probably not.
Rewind that and then hear his voice again, because I know Hunter does amazing things on social media, has a tremendous following, and I hate kind of that word following. He has a tremendous family that he's created, this community he's created on social media, but he doesn't talk in a lot of his videos.
I sure don't.
And so I know today I was like, this is your voice. Ah, I had no idea. So Hunter, I'm going to jump right into it.
Sure.
What does movement mean to you?
Man, starting with the tough ones.
Right?
I wasn't prepped for this. I have a lot of mentors and I have a lot of people in the industry that I look up to. And one of my favorite things that I've kind of picked up from a few different people is like, because movement can mean a lot of different things. Like we could talk about the physical definition of it, what's actually happening in the body. Like that's how I assess people with a very scientific look at the human body. But what the ultimate goal is, physical freedom. And I believe it's my friend Max Schenck who says this a lot. Ultimately, being able to do the things that you want to do with your body pain-free, without question, that you shouldn't have to think about, am I capable of this? But what do you like to do? Do you have the capabilities? Is your body capable? Do you have any limitations? I like the idea of having physical freedom and just being, any day of the week, being able to do the things that you like to do with your body. For my body, I like to do weird things. I'm a little extreme. I kind of attract the circus crowd and extreme crowd on the internet, but that's what I like. But I don't expect that out of my clients. Like some of my clients just want to play golf on the weekends or just play with their kids without pain. The idea of movement is being able to do things without limitations, without warm-up, just having access to being able to use their body the way they want to without having to think twice about it.
Dude, I love that concept of physical freedom. I don't think people realize what that is until they lose it. Until
100%.
You get injured and you're like, damn, I can't walk down the stairs. I can't pick up my kid. I can't, whatever it is, when you lose it, then you start to realize how important it is, which is why, you know, the stuff that you're putting out, the stuff you're doing, really resonates with me as a physical therapist, especially, and just not just restoring people, but showing, not just restoring people's movement, but showing them what they're capable of.
Absolutely.
You know, movement is an amazing entryway to realizing one's true potential on so many levels, right? Because you can feel that movement and suddenly you're like, I could do this.
It's empowering. to get people out of pain and to give them back their freedom. That's something that a lot of people, when they lose it, like you said, they start to look for it, but they also kind of go into it thinking that they might not ever get it back. And due to the nature of like the therapy industry and the medical industry, there's a lot of fear mongering around that. So a lot of people are told they might not get it back. And to be honest, I'm not sitting here guaranteeing they can either, because I have no idea the condition that somebody's coming in on. But I do think that we could definitely change the verbiage used in the industry to try not to fearmonger movement and give people a little bit of freedom back to the way that they can take care of their body.
Empowering them, number one. And that's the thing right now. And you're seeing it, at least, you know, the algorithms of social media are such that we kind of see the same things over and over again. But I believe that there is a true movement around this where people are looking to really empower their patients and clients and understanding the power that words have and that words do matter.
Absolutely.
We were talking about this before, you know, when we were having lunch. What you're doing is something that I think PTs, physical therapists, it's the good ones, I'm going to say it, the good ones, have known instinctively, but you're actually putting science to it, and you have objective data now. What I'm talking about is that people can avoid certain surgeries. Arthritis is not a death sentence. Just because this hurts now doesn't mean it's going to hurt forever. Just because you have a diagnosis of an FAI doesn't mean you need that terrible surgery that probably never gets better. Right? You are actually working with people, and yes, it takes time, but you're giving them back, or you're helping them earn back, because they say give, right? You're helping them earn back their movement freedom. Can you speak on that a little bit? Just like that process, you know, you said, you know, 2 years if someone commits to working with you, like.
Sure. The one thing that I like to say is, because this is something that like people always kind of take it as a death sentence. Like I try to remind people, you are not your X-ray. You are not your MRI. That is literally an image of the state of something from one angle in 1 second of time. You're getting a brief look at one angle of a joint, and you're getting some information about it. It's not saying to ignore it either, but it's just information, and information is supposed to dictate your thought process. It's supposed to contribute to your thought process, but not. It's not a death sentence. So, for instance, I get a lot of people, unfortunately, with what I do, I wish that I could just have a preventative mindset in the industry. I wish people that felt good came to see me and I could teach them how to take care of their body so they stay feeling good. That'd be nice. Unfortunately, people don't really seek someone like me out until they're already hurting. They've already exhausted their resources. They've been to therapists, chiropractors, et cetera, and now they're willing to try out mobility work. So they come in with these diagnoses. They'll even come with x-rays, MRIs, scans, whatever else. And it's these diagnoses of FAI or arthritis, this and that. And the reality is I try and explain to them that it's just a still image and it's not enough information. It's not looking at the quality of the movement. You can't really tell the quality of all of the tissue in the joint just from an image. And if the diagnosis was true, I actually wouldn't be able to help that person at all. What I try and do with people is I try and give them guidelines to follow and movement programs and mobility programs to follow that is dictated by how they feel. So if I can get someone to move better, and I can get someone to avoid painful positions, and over the course of a couple months, their FAI goes away, they didn't have FAI. So if I get their capsule to move better with some FRC work, I give them a little external internal rotation back into their life. They have access to it where they didn't have access to it when they met me. And all of a sudden, a closing angle pinch in their hip is gone. That was diagnosed as FAI. It just means that it was misdiagnosed. It was never there in the first place. What they had is just a poorly moving capsule or something. It's, once again, it's still not enough information, but something wasn't moving well. Something was impacting. They had a pinch. And then immediately we're told that it's this death sentence diagnosis that they need surgery for. But if that was true, I wouldn't be able to help that person at all. But every single person that comes to me gets better in some regard. I'm not curing anything. I'm not fixing anything. I'm just getting people to move a little bit better and stay within limitations. I give them some guidelines to follow. And within a couple months, always things start to feel better. Little aches and pains that they just thought they had to live with for the rest of their life are going away. So it's just one of those things that I understand the need for imaging. If you're trying to gather more information, it's for sure an option, but it's not a death sentence. And it's really unfortunate when certain parts of the medical community make it seem like this is how it is and this is the only option to get rid of it.
This is a picture of you, the end. Like, there's a few things I want to unpack with that. You guys listening, I'm assuming a lot right now. I'm assuming that you know who Hunter is, and you should. If you don't, pause this episode, go to Instagram and type in @HunterFitness, and you'll see about him real quick.
There's some weird stuff on there.
That's the interesting stuff.
Just be warned.
Right? The pants that have the muscles drawn on them is my favorite. Right? Number two, kind of presupposing that you guys know what FAI and FRC is. FAI stands for femoral acetabular impingement. It means that your hip hurts. You have a pinchy hip. That's literally all it means. I did an episode not too long ago. Maybe it was a long time ago. I don't know. It's all the same to me. I did an episode about likening a diagnosis and a logo. Right, a diagnosis just gives a name to something. It just puts a name to it. It doesn't say why you have it. It doesn't say definitely what's going to fix it. It doesn't say why you got it. It doesn't really say anything except for this is what we saw at this one point in time. FAI is literally that. You have a femoral acetabular impingement. The part of your hip, the front part typically, is pinching together. You may have a cam lesion or a pincer where like the actual head of the femur is too big, or there's an overhang and you have a pincer. These are structural things. Like Hunter said, we ain't getting rid of that. But so many people have this pinchy hip, also called an FAI, because they have not the greatest movement patterns, right? We can do a whole other episode about stability, mobility concepts, things like that. But that's why people have these issues going on. So what Hunter said in there, he's kind of slipped it in, maybe you didn't hear. These people are working with him for a few months. Stuff doesn't get better in 1 week. It takes time. It's an amazing thing. We are hugely robust and hugely resilient creatures, but it doesn't get better right away. And so Hunter's in a great position. That's why I want you guys to hear this, because he has people that will work with him for a few months, and he can ask them to work with him, you know, for a few years. As a PT, sometimes you're like, the doctor's prescription says two times a week for 4 to 6 weeks, and you're like, what the hell is supposed to get done in that?
Not much.
If we went to church every day, then you would get, like, I don't know what you're supposed to do that quickly. Like, these things can absolutely improve. We're not saying that you're going to heal and have nothing be amazing, but like, you can get on the road to feeling better.
Absolutely. It's like I said, it's really unfortunate when people come in with the mindset, like, I get to hear all the stuff that people told them before they met me. So I get to hear, this is just how it is. This is just the function of your hip. You just can't squat all the way down. You can't pick up things that way. Please don't move like this. Only walk in neutral spine. Don't let your knees pass your... Like, it's all the things that everyone's heard at one point, but some people collect all of it and believe all of it, and then they become these walking, fragile structure of a once been human, and they no longer remember what it's like to be, like, this awesome biological creature that has so much variability and at one point had physical freedom. Another thing that's unfortunate is the thought process that people think that as they age... It just goes away. That freedom goes away. That movement capabilities just go away. But I unfortunately point the blame once again at the person in front of me, whoever I'm talking to, and then the people that they've worked with in the past. Because our body very much works on a use it or lose it principle. Our body gets to keep what you train on a regular basis. So if you want to be strong, you got to keep training strength. If you want to be flexible, you got to keep training flexibility. If you want range of motion, you got to keep having access to that range of motion used on a regular basis. So when people learn that and they realize that they're a little more in control of how their body ages, they no longer blame age for things. They start blaming themselves. They take a little more responsibility. Therefore, you could also dictate how things change as you move forward, which is, once again, it's empowering people. It's giving people the freedom back. Some people don't want that responsibility. Some people want to just blame others and just be able to say, well, this is just how it is. It's not my fault. This happened to me. But a lot of people, it's really not the case. A lot of people, no one's really given them the chance to gain back that power of having control over their lives again. And I think that's one of the best things about being able to work with regular people on a day-to-day basis, seeing that kind of light bulb moment. Well, usually it's like a couple weeks in when people say, like, I get two questions a lot, like, why aren't more people teaching this, and why didn't I start doing this stuff sooner? Like, what how would I feel if I started this a couple years ago? And I like that mindset, but I just tell them it doesn't matter. Playing detective about how they got here doesn't matter. What caused this doesn't matter. All you could really focus on is how to take care of yourself moving forward. And that's what I try and teach people, is like, we're not going to play detective about why your hip hurts. I don't care about the imaging you came in with, although it's some information to look at. All I care about is moving forward today, you start to do the things that are necessary so that a year from now, you're thankful you started today.
Absolutely. You know, Joe Lavaca just did a really good post on this, and some people got a little bit up in arms about it. And he said, past histories are overrated. And I agree with that. Like, yes, hear their stories, hear what's going on. The human, it all matters. But at the same time, like, when I teach course, when you teach, when Joe teaches a course, people come in and they ask you the real quick questions, and maybe you bring them up front, and you don't like go and tease out like every life history about everything. You're like, kind of, what am I seeing right now? What can I do to make it better? Yes, the other stuff plays in, but we also have to really value the here and now and not get so stuck on like, but why, because we can't change that. So what can we change moving forward?
Yeah, I really do. And I explain this to every client that comes in. I understand the need for wanting to know everything. I think it's just human nature for wanting an explanation for everything that happens, but it's not going to change how we take care of things moving forward. So we could either spend an hour playing detective trying to figure it out, and then we're just going to come to some BS conclusion anyway that's probably not true, and then proceed with the plan anyway. Or we could just put that behind us, proceed with the plan, start taking care of your body moving forward. And really, like, one of my favorite things to teach people is learning how to self-assess, learning how to, on a daily basis, see what their body's capable of with movement routines. Really, it gives them the power to not rely on fitness professionals or medical professionals. And I'm not trying to discredit professionals, because we need our network. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think enough people are empowering their clients or their patients to really learn how to take care of themselves and have a daily assessment to see, well, can I take care of this myself, or is this something that I need to look in for?
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head there. And I actually, as you're speaking, I'm going through things in my head and I'm like, damn, this is a great way to think about it. Empowering the patient to have to actually be present in the moment and self-assess. People really struggle with that. They perhaps weren't ever instructed how to do that. They are scared of doing that. And some people, like we talked about earlier, don't want to do that. It's easier to sit there and stew on the past than actually try to fix something right now. And like, but why did it happen? But why? It doesn't really matter. Because let's focus on what's happening now. And as we focus on what's happening now and look, teasing out your movement patterns and things like that, things may come up in the past that just make sense. You don't need to sit there and be like, but why? I actually had an eye assessment today. My eyes don't work so great. I can see just fine. They don't move so great. I can't like converge. Leslie, you're amazing. Thanks for coming to the gym. And we could have sat there and been like, but why don't they move? It doesn't matter. Right now, what we're looking at is the assessment, figuring out what's going on. And then actually, as we were assessing, I was like, dude, that makes so much sense. That's actually why I don't like to turn that direction. That's actually like, and things start to piece in from your past. And so you're not like losing yourself by assessing the now.
Nope.
But it's a hugely, I think, scary place for some people.
Sure. I think like assessment itself is critical, but assessing the now is what's critical, not trying to figure out the past. Like I said, like having the past injury history is overrated. It's not that it's not good information, but it's not what's happening in your body right now. So when somebody comes in, I ask their medical history. It's for sure information. I'd like to have it on file. But I almost never look at it again because it's just a conversation piece at that point. So when they start asking, do you think it's the old injury that's causing this sensation? Or is it when I twisted my arm or when I picked that thing up 5 years ago? Is that why I feel this? I don't know. Let's just look at how your shoulder moves today. Are we happy with that? Let's look at how your back is moving today. Is it segmenting? Are you happy with that? Can your hip rotate? No. Today. I care about today. I don't care about 10 years ago. It rotated 10 years ago. Awesome. 10 years ago, it did. Today, it doesn't. So let's work on rotating it today. And then if we start to, it almost seems like it's oversimplifying it, but it's a thought process that works. If we look at you and what you're capable of doing now, so I have a starting point for you, and then you tell me what you want to do with your body. And those two things aren't always aligned. Very rarely are they. So your body can do this, but you want to be able to do this. As long as we move on a daily basis, that starts to close that gap. It doesn't matter what your history is, because I'm taking you from the day I met you, from where you were, towards where you want to be. And for some people, that's getting out of pain. For some people, that's playing their sport better. For some people, it's a combination of both. But we're just getting you from where you are when I assessed you on day one and getting you towards where you want to be.
Now, Hunter, have you always held this outlook on things?
No.
Yeah.
Of course not.
Where did this come from?
I learned almost everything I teach from this mindset from the FRC course, which is now a course that I travel the world and teach. Before that, I try not to make myself sound that bad, because I'm sure some of my old clients will listen to this, but I didn't have a good assessment process. Like, somebody would come in and I was just the young trainer who, like, I like to squat and deadlift and bench press and do pull-ups, and I have this split that worked for my body, so I'm gonna try this on you guys. Like, that's unfortunately, it's how a lot of trainers work. It's how I work too. It's how I learned to be in fitness, so that's how I taught fitness. When somebody brought me through fitness the first time, when I was learning from mentors or my older brother, there was no assessment process. It was just, here's how we're working out today. So when I started training clients, and I started training clients when I was 18, I just started training clients. On day one, we squat, we deadlift, we bench press, we do pull-ups, we do this, we do that, we do bicep curls. It's awesome, super functional exercises. and then as time went on, I never had any explanation for why things would go wrong. Like, eventually a client got hurt. Occasionally I would get hurt. I actually got hurt a bunch. Things would go wrong. I'd lose clients. I'd always like to make an excuse. Oh, well, it just wasn't the right fit anymore. But the reality is I just wasn't a very good trainer at the time. Throwing random exercises together will work for a random amount of people, but it's not going to work for everybody. So when I first took FRC, I started to learn a way of looking at the Homo sapien in front of me with a thought process, not as like a project that I'm giving exercises to do. I'm not just trying to change their body with the exercises I like. I need to look a little more deeper into how can I think about taking care of this person in front of me who is 30 years older than me, has an injury history that's different than me, who has shoulders don't move well, zero hip internal rotation. They're very different than me. So for me to train them like me is just, it doesn't make sense. Let me looking back on it now, it just doesn't make sense. So the thought process is, let me see what you're capable of. Like, what the word you hear a lot in the FRC realm is prerequisites. So if I watch your shoulder move, does it have the prerequisites for the exercises that you like or I like? Or does it have the prerequisites for the sport that you play? So if I'm working with a golfer and you have zero hip internal rotation, but every time you swing a club, it requires some hip internal rotation, do you have the prerequisites for that motion? And if not, we need to train in a manner that gets that back. And for everyone, that's different. It's not a series of exercises. It's a thought process. So I have to bring you through an assessment, see what your joints can do, what they can't do, and then start to close the gap between what you want to do or what your sport demands and where we are today. And that's 100% black and white different from how I used to train people. I thought everyone's body worked the same, so all the same exercises could work for everybody. And I'm embarrassed that I used to think like that, but I also understand that it's a part of growth.
We have all been there.
Sure.
The PTs where you print out the hip protocol.
Another fact. I told Shantae here that I spent 6 years working in physical therapy offices. I started when I was either 14 or 15 years old, and they paid me to be a physical therapist's aide, which means that I got to do ultrasounds on people's injuries. I got to put electrical stim on their injured
joints.
They're
breaking the law left and right.
I got to type into the computer what joint we were working on. So I literally typed in hip, HIP, and then pressed print, and it printed out 6 exercises that I didn't understand. I didn't even know what a pelvic tilt was when I was 14, but I would start bringing people through based on the 3-step directions that the sheet had. And then for 3 years I worked there when I was high school. That got me interested in physical therapy. So when I went to college in Long Beach, I went to 3 years at a physical therapist's office here as well. And the same thing, I just ultrasound people, electrical stim, print out the program, bring them through the exercises. Electrical stim, ultrasound, print out the program, go through the exercises. I had no idea what I was doing because I wasn't taught any assessment. They're just coming in with hip pain, coming in with shoulder pain. And then the 14-year-old kid, 15-year-old kid, and when I was in college, 17-year-old kid, 18-year-old kid was just given patients to take care of. And it's absurd to me. And I understand why so many people are frustrated with the therapy side of things too. And I'm not blaming certain physical therapists. I think it's more of the system that's broken. It's the insurance system that's broken. But I do believe people are doing the best they can, but I don't think there's enough education going around so that the best they can is high enough across the industry.
Yes. Absolutely. And that's part of the reason I start this podcast, is part of the reason I bring different people on, and part of the reason that I do the posts that I do is to try and elevate that standard. And I think that part of that's the way that's going to happen is by educating the consumer. And we talked about this before, like, it is important to me to be able to show a consumer, a patient, what a good therapist, clinician, trainer looks like. Like, I think that is the way that you're going to actually elevate things, because this way, when that person goes to someone and that person, the clinician, the provider they're seeing is doing some hokey stuff or like having the aide illegally ultrasound them, and they're like, maybe I shouldn't be here. This is not so good. So we'll tease that out more. But Hunter, you teach for FRC.
Yes.
The people, so for those not familiar, it's functional range conditioning. We will get more into that. Don't worry. I didn't want to lead the episode with that because I want you to hear about Hunter. It all weaves in anyway. But within these FRC courses, functional range conditioning courses, what would you say is the primary demographic attending? And then if you could speak to a little bit how you took the FR course and what that meant to you as a trainer taking.
Sure. So at the FRC course, I'd say our biggest demographic is personal trainers around the world, because it's primarily a training modality and a thought process around a training modality that we're trying to teach. But more and more, definitely more frequently nowadays, there's a lot of physical therapists in the course. So like chiropractors that take the course, massage therapists that take the course, yoga instructors are starting to become a big part of our population because they also have a body control practice. And like I said, at the course, we don't have like a manual that we hand out that has a list of exercises that means that you're following the FRC method. It's the exact opposite of that, actually, which actually frustrates and disappoints a lot of people that show up, because a lot of people are used to being told what step to take, what's step one, what's step two, how many sets, how many reps. And what we try and get across the two-day course is a thought process. So how to look at a brand new either patient or client that's in front of you, see what their body's capable of, see what it's missing, what is their sport demand, how to close that gap as time goes on. But there's no list of exercises that accomplishes that. It's a thought process. So if I assess someone, their right shoulder might get different exercises than their left shoulder, because it's not a shoulder exercise program. It's your right shoulder doesn't have internal rotation, but your left shoulder doesn't have external rotation. So I'm going to give you different things for each shoulder. But unfortunately, that requires trying to teach people a way to critically think about taking care of somebody, which isn't as easy as just giving a manual. So some people leave frustrated because we never gave them sets and reps to follow or an exact series of exercises to follow. But those are the people that just haven't adopted a critical thinking process in general. I'm not just trying to sound mean about that, but it's something that I think needs to be talked about more in the industry, is that we can't treat people like there's a formula to follow when there's so many different things about the human body. There's so many different conditions that people can come in on that really learning how to assess and learning how to communicate what you find in that assessment is one of the more powerful things that can make you a better insert anything here, trainer, therapist, massage therapist, chiropractor, anything. Learning how to assess and seeing what the needs of the person are in front of you instead of pushing what you like on them will be a big game changer for a lot of trainers out there, a lot of therapists out there. I think that's something that's missing in today's industry. As for the FR course, what FRC is, like I said, it's a training modality. So it's how you get someone to train in a way to improve their mobility over time, how to give them, the way that I describe it, it's all semantics, but I like to say that improves people's cold mobility. So I think people's range of motion can improve with a ton of warm-up drills. So you can mobilize tissue, you can go to a hot yoga class and stretch for an hour in a heated room, and you're gonna have more range of motion. The problem with that is you wake up the next day and you're just as tight as you were the day before. You're just doing temporary things to change range of motion. What FRC, what we're trying to do is train people in a way so they wake up in the morning and have access to that range of motion. They have strength throughout the range of motion without having to warm up. Not saying warm-ups are important, I just don't think you should have to trick tissue into more range of motion before using it through that range of motion.
Now, say that one more time. I like that.
I don't think you should have to trick your body into gaining access to range of motion to just use that range of motion right now. So if the only way you can demonstrate a full range of motion squat is by foam rolling for 30 minutes and then you load up the bar and do full range of motion squats with a ton of weight, I think that's a bad idea. Is it my opinion? Sure, but it's just I'm trickling you my thought process a little bit. I don't think we should have to trick the body into gaining more range of motion temporarily. I think we should train the body so your body trusts you with that more range of motion permanently or for long-lasting changes. And I think that's our goal with FRC, is teaching people how to accomplish that. What FR is created by the same person, Dr. Andrea Ospina, and he's created several manual therapy courses first. They actually came before FRC.
It's crazy for you guys out there. I didn't know this either.
And they're teaching a way to palpate, assess, and treat clinical issues. So if somebody comes in and they actually have mechanical tension within a muscle or tendon or capsule, or if they have neurological tension, how to tell the difference between mechanical tension and neurological tension, and how to treat people, how to actually palpate the tissue, assess the quality of it, and make a treatment decision going forward. Now, I'm not qualified to do that. I've never taken any treatment courses. I'm not a licensed massage therapist. I'm not a chiropractor. I'm not a physical therapist. But that was one of the more valuable courses I took for a couple reasons. One, I gained an incredible amount of anatomical knowledge because I haven't taken a class on anatomy since college. It's been a while. So I've been getting an incredible refresher on anatomy and like living anatomy, not dead person anatomy. So not these colored lines and perfect segments where things start and end, because that's just not how the human body exists in real life. But seeing how they teach living person anatomy is a very different thing, and I really enjoyed that. But then really my greatest takeaway as a trainer taking a therapy course was seeing what good therapy is. Seeing what kind of goes into, like, you can't do good therapy in a 5-minute window if you're seeing 20 people per hour. It's just not possible. So the way that they're teaching it, which takes a lot more effort and a lot more one-on-one attention to get good therapy, when my clients do get hurt or when I get hurt, when things go wrong, because it happens, I'm not going to pretend like I'm the perfect trainer. Occasionally I push people too far, or occasionally I do something stupid and I get injured. So I now have a way of communicating to my clients about good therapy. I could tell them why a place that I used to work at, where it's a 15-year-old kid, kid putting an e-stim on your shoulder is not the right thing to go to, but going to the guy down the street that, maybe he charges a little bit more, maybe he doesn't take insurance, but he's actually going to take care of you. He's going to spend the time, he's going to spend as much time as necessary, not just the time necessary, but he's going to carve out the window in his schedule that makes it so he could actually treat you, which unfortunately takes time. Because one thing that like I try and get across this point, both in FRC, and I know they stress it in FR as well, there's never been one time in history where any stimulus has changed anything at a lasting level. So one stimulus going into human tissue does not change that tissue. If I lift weights once, I'm not strong. If I stretch once, I'm not flexible.
What?
So consistency and effort continuously is what trumps anything. A continued stimulus over time. So I know a big part of the FR protocol is also giving people homework, because having someone come in for an hour session might be better than the 5-minute session they're getting down the street, but it's also still not enough. There's 168 hours in the week. So how can we, once again, empower our patients to get therapy from a better therapist, but also learn from that therapist what it takes to continue the stimulus on their own, so they continue the remodeling process within their own body for whatever tissue needs change.
Absolutely. So many things that you just said there. So many things. Elevating the professions across multiple professions, educating yourself, going outside of your bubble of knowledge and education to see what other people are doing, so that you can refer and have a better understanding of what they're doing. I think that this is something that's hugely invaluable. And we're talking about this at lunch. I see that, you know, there's PTs out right now who perhaps maybe feel like they have to be able to do it all. We're like, I'm going to go to this course so that I can do that too and that too. And that's not the case. If you want to bridge the gap and you want to be the hybrid clinician, cool. If that's not really your jam, you should still be going to those courses, because then you're going to understand what is going to happen when people go and see someone else. This way, like Hunter said, you know who you can refer to. And let's please have that abundance mindset where if you refer out, that is not a loss for you. All right? Don't stop looking at people as numbers also. That's not a loss for you. If you help that person get better, whether it's your hands on them or someone else's, they're going to come back to you.
What I try and tell people all the time is that it's amazing how much in the fitness industry, and I'm learning more and more that it's also in the therapy industry, which is crazy to me, but that I was talking to Shantae about this, that people think it's a zero-sum game. So it's either I'm successful or you're successful. I get the clients or you get the clients. That there's no way for us to kind of work together, which is insane. The way that I try and make that mindset shift in people is that if I'm a good trainer, I'm a better trainer if I have a better network. So I'm not losing business by sending people to other people. Even if it's another trainer, I'm not losing business. If I link up one of my clients with someone that has a specialty that far outweighs mine, and that's the specialty they need, I'm a better trainer to introduce them to that person. If my client needs therapy, I know my role. That's not my role. So I'm going to send them to a therapist. We'll take weeks off of training. Sure, it'll affect my income, but that doesn't matter because I have a client for life now. Whereas if I ignored the fact that they needed therapy and kept training them through it, and now they're actually injured, and then they take months off and then maybe never come back, I didn't help the therapist improve their practice. I lost a client, and now someone's injured looking for somebody new, and they might get someone that has no idea what they're doing with the human body. So building my network and sharing my clients with other trainers, I actually do share clients with several other trainers because I know my role, I know what I'm good at, and I know that there's trainers that are better than me at other things. So if I'm working with a powerlifter, sure, I can improve his shoulder internal rotation, I can get his spine to segment, I can do a lot of things, but if he wants to get strong as all hell, I'm not his guy. I'm not strong as all hell. I'm not the person that studied under powerlifters and to get him better. So I'll do the mobility portion of his program. He'll go to a strength portion, and that little nagging thing in his lower back, he's going to go to the therapist that I trust as well. All three of us do well because of that, and the client's patient is getting the best possible care due to the fact that we're all agreeing to work together.
There you go. Collaboration, not competition. So you guys listening, I strategically did not have Hunter give you his background from the beginning of the episode, because one that's like kind of really boring, but also because I think that if I lead with, hey, this is a person that has a very significant personal training background, I still think some people would poo-poo it and be like, oh, now you've heard him. I don't know how long into this we are. I can't see. It's very sunny. I can't see the dial on the thing. You've heard it. You start to hear, one, this is what a good trainer sounds like. This is what a great trainer sounds like. Two, you should be chomping at the bit to take these courses. Three, this collaboration mentality and how we can bridge the gap, how we can work together. Hunter, I wanted to ask you kind of how did, because your story, I know this story, guys. I already asked him before. Your story of how you got into FRC, how you got into mobility work, your story of how a coffee cup almost crippled you.
So I went through many phases, I think, as most trainers do. You know, you go through that kettlebell phase, bodybuilding phase, this phase, movement patterns phase, flow phase. Everyone goes through their kind of phases based off what's trending at any point. And I was coming out of the year of a several year stint of a powerlifting phase. And something I've never lied about is that I am more naturally flexible than the average guy, and there's no doubt about that. Over the last couple of years, I've improved it dramatically with the direct work I've done for mobility, but naturally, I was just bendy. I could touch my toes any day of the week without stretching. It wasn't a problem. I can get to the bottom of a Cossack squat easily. It's a deep side lunge. But as a flexible person, and I was never coached in person for powerlifting, I was following programs online, I just started having a huge ego about getting stronger regularly, to the point where I ended up giving myself some pretty bad tendonitis in several joints. And one day I had this reality check when it actually caused wincing pain in my face to pick up my coffee mug. And I think it was either the same day or the next day. I had to use two hands to clean my barbecue grill with the little scraper thing because one hand wasn't strong enough to even hold it, and it hurt to push it along the barbecue grill. So I couldn't drink my coffee without pain. I couldn't clean my barbecue without pain. And I had this epitome, like this, what the fuck am I doing? I hope it's okay to curse on this.
Perfectly fine.
So I had this like this mentality, and I thought about it. I was like, no one cares if I'm strong. My girlfriend, who's now my fiance, doesn't care if I'm strong. She doesn't love me anymore because I deadlifted 400 instead of 390 the week before. There's no difference. It doesn't matter. So I started to question why I was doing it. Like I impressed myself a lot. I followed a training program for a while, but I also just drove my body into the ground. So I started to seek answers, as most people do. Like I said, it'd be way easier if we just got everyone that felt good to learn mobility to stay feeling good. But I, being human and having a ton of flaws, just like most other people, I waited until things went away from me or things got hurt or I couldn't move my elbow without pain before I started to look up elbow mobility or elbow injury prevention type stuff. And I ended up finding FRC, as most people do, on the internet, and I went to the course for very selfish reasons, because I was watching people go to the course, or people that taught the course at the time. They moved beautifully. They moved incredibly well through the range of motion that I have access to or had access to, but I couldn't move. I couldn't move through the range of motion, so I didn't know what it meant at the time. Now what I describe it as is I had a ton of passive range of motion. My active range of motion was nowhere close to it. So my leg could be pulled all the way into a deep range of motion, but I couldn't actively get it there. So I couldn't move efficiently or move well through my end range of motion. So I went just to see how I can close that gap. I wanted to see, what am I doing differently than how they're training to move better? Unfortunately, or I could actually say fortunately, I left with something much more than that. I left with this paradigm shift in my training. It was a complete left turn in my career because I went for myself, but I left the course thinking, oh my God, I think everybody should be trained that way. They're talking about assessing your clients. They're talking about assessing each joint. They're talking about, really, do you have the prerequisites to do the exercises? Do your joints have the capabilities of doing what you're asking your clients to do? And I was looking at the way I was training, looking at what my body was actually capable of, and I started to find these huge gaps there. And then I realized I've never even checked this with any of my clients. So at the time, I had a huge problem with that because there was no way for me to figure out, like, well, how do I understand this more? I get it. It makes sense, but I don't get it yet. It was a lot of information. It was very different from how I was training people. So I got home from that course and I signed up for the next one, so I could learn it a little bit more. I wanted to go in there and not only understand my questions, but now I started paying way more attention to how the other people in the room were asking questions, because most people don't have the natural flexibility that I have. They're stiff, they're sore, their bodies don't move as well, and those are my clients. So I wanted to see what kind of questions those people had at a course like this. I got home from that course again and then signed up for the next one. And I basically stalked FRC around the country. I just flew myself everywhere it was, month after month, sometimes even two in a month, and I just aggressively took notes as much as I can. I followed everything to the best of my ability. The more I learned, the more I brought to my clientele, the more it changed the thought process of how I take care of people. It changed the way that I have client intake, so even when I take a new person in, it's drastically different because of FRC. And because of that, I landed an assistant gig teaching for them, because I just kept showing up. They were like, well, we might as well give you a t-shirt if you're going to keep showing up. And Dr. Spina basically took me on. He's been my mentor for the last couple of years because of that. So I landed the gig with a happy accident, and now I get to travel around the world, and I still train clients in Long Beach, and I take on new people to help them with their mobility. I try and teach them the thought process so they can take care of themselves and not rely on me. And then on the weekends, I get to travel the world. Like I was just telling Shantae, I just got back from Korea. And I get to try and teach the thought process to a whole new set of trainers and therapists and massage therapists and chiropractors and yogis from all over the world. Except I like to go into it with this mindset of like, a couple years ago, I was in your shoes. I was looking for answers. I was looking for the answers on how to make my body feel better, make my clients' bodies feel better. But what I thought I was getting and what I got was very different. So I try and warn people about that ahead of time now, saying like, you might think that you're going to leave with a list of exercises and a protocol, and you're not. All we're going to do for the next 2 days is try and teach you the thought process, try and teach you a way to critically think about the person in front of you and how to get them from where they are to where they want to be. And that's for me, it's a very fulfilling thing, because even if there's a couple people in that room that can adopt that thought process, and there ends up being a lot because I watch the community grow every single month, but it's one of those things that if a few people can change the way that they look at it, instead of just, we're not just exercising clients, we're changing the way that they age, we're changing the way that they move, we're either empowering them or taking power away from them, and all that matters is what matters is how you speak to them and what you're teaching them. So with my clients, I want to make my client smarter than any trainer in a 20 mile radius. I'm trying to educate them. I keep nothing. There's nothing that I teach at the FRC course that I also don't teach to my clients as I'm training them. I want them to be as smart and knowledgeable about their body as possible so that they don't need me. If my client comes to me one day and says, you know what, I think I'm good, that's not a loss in my book. That's one of the biggest successes I've ever had.
Huge.
If I teach someone everything I know and they could say, you're no longer necessary, I've learned to get out of pain and take care of my body and get more mobile and move better.
Amazing.
It was nice knowing you.
Yes.
Awesome. God bless. That's the best win in the world.
God bless. That's a dream if someone could say that to you, Ed. So Hunter, I want to tease out something a little bit in there. Two parts there.
Sure.
You said you are a naturally more flexible guy.
Yes.
That's the first thing. So people that are watching Instagram, like, yes, he inherently has more mobility, more flexibility, I should say, than the average Joe. One of the things that I think is a misconception, and we talked about it, is that people may go to this course thinking that, hey, I'm the Tin Man, I'm going to come out looking like Hunter. Is that the goal? Is that reality? What is that?
I strongly don't think that should be everyone's goal. And this is even something like when, because another question we got the course a lot is like, well, how much range of motion am I trying to train for my clients? Once again, it goes back to that question is where are you or where is your client now? And what is their sport demand or what is their activity demand? So I work with a wide range of professionals. I work with some professional like baseball players, football players, basketball players. I also work on a weird end of the spectrum, professional circ artists, professional dancers. Now, if I just viewed the body as like a guidebook of numbers to follow, this would be a problem. Because if I trained my NBA player like my circus artist, I'd ruin his career. Within a couple of weeks, I'd ruin his career. If I tried to get my golfer to move like my dancer, I'd be either wasting a lot of time, wasting a lot of money, or ruining his career as well. You could for sure take things too far. And for my body, I'm just experimenting. I'm just curious, like how far, if I continue to train my body in this way, does it continue to improve? Short answer, yes. The connective tissue in our body is constantly adaptable. So if I continue to put this stimulus in for more range of motion and more strength throughout my range of motion, every year my movement capabilities go up and up. I'm able to do more cool things with my body. It's strange. It's just what I like to get better at is cool human tricks. But I don't expect everyone that comes to the course to do that with themselves or with their clients, because once again, it could be a detriment to people to try and get what I have. There's no reason that a track athlete should have the hamstring extensibility that I have. That might ruin his track career.
Yeah.
So the goal is to teach people the thought process and the systematic way that we think people should be trained to garner more range of motion, and then to garner control of that range of motion, and then to strengthen that range of motion. And we do have it down to a thought process in a pretty systematic way. But you have to know what your goals are and what your clients' goals are, because you could waste a lot of time with this stuff if you're just trying to get more for no reason. Now, I think there's a couple things in FRC that there's definitely a more is better and a more is not better. Just giving people range of motion for the sake of range of motion, trying to make people move like me, probably not going to be successful trainers. Getting people to have a body control practice and just control of what they do have access to, and having like a daily assessment, like what we do with cars, I think that's something, that's a more is better. Like, I don't think anyone will ever say, you know what, I have too much body control. I don't want any more body control. Yeah. I don't want to have control of this meat vessel that I'm living in. meat vessel. Write that down. So I think that teaching people about their body and control of their body is a practice that'll never go away. I think I could work on body control of people day in, day out, and just make them better humans because of that. But the aspect of FRC that's expanding range of motion and opening up range of a joint that you didn't have access to for a long time, you for sure have to be careful. If you're working with athletes and you open up range of motion in season, not off season, and then you throw them back into their sport, you have access to a joint range of motion that they didn't have access to for a decade, and now you're throwing them into the field where they're putting max effort movement through that range. That could potentially be a career ending. So just once again, it comes down to there's not a guidebook. There's not a rule book here. There's a thought process and a way to critically think about what someone needs. And I don't even remember the original question or how long I've been talking, but that's kind of how we think about it. That's our goal with the weekend, is to teach people that there's not numbers. How much ankle dorsiflexion is enough? I don't know. What do you want to do? Are you okay just doing back squats, or do you want to get to an Olympic snatch? Because those have two different kinds of prerequisites. It's very different. So I'm going to train my power lifter different than I'm going to train my Olympic lifter. I'm not going to give the power lifter more of what he doesn't need.
That's more is not better. Better is better. I love what Hunter's saying is specificity here. And, you know, like my original question was basically, or I'll give the answer, my answer to the original question, because he answered it. I'll give my version, in that, no, you're not going to leave the weekend and be able to move like Hunter.
No,
you may never, ever be able to move like Hunter, and that doesn't matter. That's okay. The whole goal is he's trying to give you more education, more resources, more of a movement arsenal, more control, more resources, like I said, so that you can learn how to control your body and create this movement practice. The goal is not to just come out and be bendy and be able to do circus tricks. Unless that's what you're trying to do, then okay, then you work towards it. But the whole goal of FRC, and yes, I took FRC quite a few years ago. I'm an early adopter with things. Generally, the earlier you take a course, the cheaper it is. So, you know, take that for what you will. Like, I took this course quite a few years ago, and that's what I took out of it. It was, here's a system, and when you systematize things, it makes it easier to follow. Here's a system, not a protocol. Here's a system with concepts of how to work on controlling your meat vessel. That's 100% what it is. And what
specificity and progressive overload. It's weird how the same things came up with good trainers over and over again. It's not me. Specificity and progressive overload are things that will guide your decision making. If you're taking care of another Homo sapien, I don't care if it's massage, I don't care if it's chiropractics, I don't care if it's strength training, I don't care if it's mobility, you better be thinking about specificity, or am I doing things specific for the goal at hand, and am I progressively adapting the tissues involved to move us towards the way that we want? So if I want a more resilient athlete, am I progressively overloading the system? If I want to improve range of motion, am I progressing the angle that I'm doing my training at to improve range of motion over time? It's specificity and progressive overload over and over and over again, so much that people like walk away, they're like, that just seems too simple. Like, it can't be that simple that I just have to start training like this to start getting the results like that. But that's what specificity is. That's exactly what it is. You just have to start putting in the work to make the improvements that your body wants. So if range of motion is a goal, you got to start training range of motion.
Exactly. And we have that progressive overload principle. You actually had spoken about this when we were having lunch. The concept of stress and understanding how physical stress ties into things, and really that the best way to answer someone's question when they're like, well, how many reps are sets and how long do I hold this, is not as simple as, oh, here's the number behind it. Numbers are pretty arbitrary that we've given, 3 sets of 10. Like, it came from the military because it's easy to remember. That if you want to really understand how many reps and sets, how long, how often, it's, do you understand this concept of applying stress? Can you speak on that?
Sure. So it's always frustrating because, like, if you see, like, a lot of the fitness communities online nowadays, therefore a lot of people just argue online about what they think is right. So if you talk about, like, sets and reps of anything, not even mobility work, but sets and reps of anything, when people are arguing, they're saying, no, 3 sets of 10 is better than 4 sets of 8, is better than 5 sets of 5. All that person's really saying by arguing is saying, this is what I am doing, and it appears to be working. But you have to understand that the person on the other side of the argument is saying, well, this is what I'm doing, and it appears to be working. Because a lot of things work. A lot of things work when you realize that everyone's doing the same thing, which is stressing the human body. Now, if you stress the human body, You then have to monitor the response of that stress. You have to see how the stress impacts the human body. That's not always easy, but it's what you have to do. Then you adjust the stressor, either up or down, based off of if you got the result that you wanted, and then you adjust accordingly. It's a rinse and repeat model. So I dose in physical stress, and then I monitor how my client's bodies or my body changes because of it. If I could handle that stress and nothing broke, nothing went wrong, maybe I could handle a little more stress. If things did go wrong, maybe I'm too sore the next day or my body just didn't like it, maybe I'd lessen the stress a little bit the next day. But everything we do from a physical standpoint, both I believe from therapy and training, is we're just playing with different stressors. So 3 sets of 10 at 135 pounds is a stressor. 10 sets of 3 is another stressor. It's just dosing in stress and seeing how the body responds to it. And a lot of things work. So when people ask me sets and reps with mobility work, I tell them dead honest, because it's the only right answer, is it depends and I don't know. It depends on the person in front of me, their goals, what is their capacity to handle load right now? Because if we exceed that capacity, we're going to injure them. If we go too low under that capacity, nothing's going to change. So we have to find that sweet spot in the middle, which is where that monitor comes in. We have to make sure to monitor the response after we do things. So this, although you made a comment saying, like, we're talking with physical stressors, but it is actually important to talk to your clients about all the stressors.
Yes, thank
because
you.
It does come into play 100%. Your body can't really tell the difference between
there
physical stress, psychological stress,
exactly.
Mental stress, work stress,
there
your
you
wife
go.
Is mad at you stress, your kids are a little shit stress.
Yeah,
all the stress adds up. It's one of those things that, so you might be saying, this is the set and rep scheme that works for me. Yeah, maybe for your professional athlete who sleeps 10 hours a night, it has a paid nutritionist and everything else. But for the general public, who's only sleeping 5.5 to 6 hours a night, whose boss hates them, who's going through a divorce, maybe 3 sets and 10 doesn't work because they're handling a lot more stress on their plate and they're getting no help from anybody. So learning about stress, reading books on stress, learning how the body adapts to stress, I think is one of the learning adaptation, like really learning how the body adapts, is one of the things that I don't think is pushed enough in the training, fitness, and therapy world. I'm not saying people don't talk about it, but very rarely do you see people talk, because it's not fun to talk about. It's not sexy stuff.
Not sexy, exactly.
People want to talk about how to get your leg behind your head. They don't want to talk about physical stress to the system. So it's one of those things that I understand why people are asking those questions. It makes sense to have a number, but unfortunately the human body is not a mathematical equation that follows numbers. It's a biological system that follows stressors and that deals with stressors and then adapts to stressors, and that we evolved to deal with these stressors. And unfortunately, since every human is different and comes from a different background, you can't treat it like you're just dealing with human. You have to deal with Claire or John or Mike or whoever else, and that's so different person to person. So I understand the question, how many sets and reps, but in reality it just doesn't make sense. So to give a general recommendation, I would err on the side of less, work towards more, because you don't want to hurt people. But the reality is, I still have no idea. I have no idea how much to stress people. You just got to start with a little bit and work towards optimal.
You know, you're asking, it's difficult because you're asking people to actually pay attention to what they're feeling.
Critical thinking.
And they don't want to do that. They're like, just tell me what to do. But okay, if you really need that default, start on the side of less, then we progress to more. Teasing out, we're almost done, but teasing out here. Is it possible then, I asked this, I'm setting it up because I've seen your slides and such on social media. Is it possible to prevent injury?
No.
Oh, God.
No. Find me one person who could prevent every injury in the world, and I will stop being angry about this on the internet. Find me the person who could prevent injury if it doesn't involve putting you in a bubble room stuck in a corner, not being able to move. It's just not possible. I understand why it's a buzzword. I get it. Everybody wants injury prevention because everyone's been injured, and the idea of preventing it seems like this magical land that no one's able to achieve. Guess what? Because no one can achieve it. All you could really do is train someone in a manner that gets them ready for the insult that their sport demands. Even if the sport is just day-to-day life with their kids, that's a sport. It's what's the physical demands or physical stressors of that person's life, and how can we prepare their bodies for those stressors? So we put this up on a slide at FRC all the time. You know it as my favorite slide, but we always say that like any injury comes down to this equation. This is the brilliance of Dr. Spina. It's what he simplified it so well. It made so much sense to me right on the first day I saw
loved it.
And he said that any injury can be boiled down to an equation, that the load going into the tissue exceeds the load-bearing capacity of the tissue. That could be an acute injury. I step off a curb, roll my ankle, and the force that went in from my body weight into my lateral ankle exceeded what my lateral ankle could handle. So there's an injury. Or it could even be repetitive strain over time. So the grocery person who's bagging things over and over again, moving their elbow back and forth, over time, the load that goes in over the course of months exceeds the capacity that tissue could handle, and they now have a repetitive strain injury. But whatever it is, whether it's acute, chronic, anything else, the load that went in, too high for the tissue to handle. Now, when that happens, let's say I go back to that ankle roll example. So my capacity was at a certain level before. The tissue is now injured, so the capacity comes down dramatically. Now, the problem, I think, with traditional rehab, the definition is to try and rehabilitate the tissue to bring it back to the capacity it had before. Which I understand, because they're saying you were injured, so let's get you back to where it was before. But that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because they got injured at that capacity. So they got hurt pretty bad there. So why would we just try and get them to that point before? So although I don't think it's injury prevention, I think a better word is injury mitigation. If we take them through the therapy process and then through the training process, because it's the same thing, that let's bring them back to the state they were before. So bump up the capacity of injured tissue back to what it was before, and then keep bumping up the capacity over and over again for months, forever, for as long as the person lives.
Exactly.
Keep bringing up the capacity of that tissue. You might not be able to prevent an injury, but you for sure can mitigate the damage when shit happens. Because your nervous system will falter. Our nervous system's not perfect. Things will go wrong. So if I roll my ankle again, if I go trail running, which is how I injure myself, or if I step off the curb wrong and I do get injured, either there's a low capacity to handle the load, or over the last year, I've been bumping up the capacity as the months went on, so that when I do roll my ankle again, it could be a full 3-grade blowout and I tear everything again. Or maybe I bring up the capacity so when it does roll, maybe I just have like a level 1 sprain. So I didn't prevent an injury. I still got injured. I'm still going to have to go through a rehab protocol now. But I didn't bring the capacity as low again. I mitigated the damage by focusing on strength within my range, which is what mobility work is really aiming for.
Yes. Mobility work. Guys, look it up. We're not talking about just passive flexibility that you don't have access to. You know, he's teased that out a little bit. I have strategically not gone down the rabbit hole of like, what exactly is the FRC curriculum, things like that, because this is not an episode about that. I want you to hear about Hunter and hear about his thought processes and how he approaches things. And honestly, you guys should absolutely be as enthralled by this discussion as I am, and I strategically left that question for last. Most bang for your buck. It's going to be a nice little teaser at the beginning of the episode. But it's true. These things, and I love that, you know, words matter. It ties back into what we said before. Words matter, whether you're saying prevention or mitigation. They are different. He said the nervous system, the body, it will falter. It happens. But it's what happens after that. Is that, is your body prepared for X, Y, and Z? Or is that, nope, I'm only at A, B, and C because I haven't increased that tissue capacity at all, ever. And most people don't even go to rehab, honestly. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah, no, I know.
You get injured and you don't even bring the tissue capacity back up to where it was. Is lower than that?
What's the number one injury to happen after you injure anything? Name anything. So you have an ACL tear. What's going to happen again?
You're going to tear it again.
If you anteriorly dislocate your shoulder, what's going to happen again?
Same exact thing.
Another anterior dislocation.
Same thing.
Once again, it's either because they didn't go to rehab, or they didn't rehab well, or when they did rehab, they just brought it back up to the capacity it was before, and then went right back into the activity or sport that injured them in the first place.
When you guys listening to this, you should be like kind of sitting there like, oh my God, he's 100% right. And you knew this instinctively, but you kind of didn't, you're not doing it.
It sucks to hear it out loud sometimes,
though. But
you're
like, shit, he's right. I've only been bringing them back to where they were.
And from a chronic ankle sprainer myself. And never rehabbing it, and then just shrugging my shoulders as to why it kept happening. When I saw the slides at my first FRC cert, I was like, ah, shit.
Yeah, literally.
That kind of just makes sense, huh? That's weird.
So simple, and you're like, yeah, if I've only brought you back to where you were before when you got injured, I should not be surprised that you got injured again.
Weird.
Shit, weird how that happens. So, Mr. Hunter, is there anything that you would like to leave the people with? All right, guys, I actually went and begged Hunter to call me, take time out of his most valuable schedule to do what? Answer your question about the mustache. All right, we did the whole episode. We had a great day. And I didn't ask him about the mustache because I like the mustache. I like the haircut. I told some people that I had, you know, interviewed Hunter. They saw on Instagram and they're like, did you ask him about the mustache? And I was like, no, because people change. But anyway, I brought him back on.
World, world's got priorities, Maestro. So
I was all out of line, I see. So Hunter, this will take less than 2 minutes of your time, or however long you want to talk. The mustache, the haircut. Why? If you want to say why, or what it means to you, whatever you want to say about it.
Sure. Well, I could talk. You know, we could have a whole other discussion about this. My hair is dear to my heart. So just to give a little bit of background, I'm not just to let everyone know about why I cut my hair, but I actually have grown my hair out like I think 4 times now, and I donate it to charity, and that's actually why I grow it out and have a man bun most of the year.
I had no idea.
So the point is to grow it out and then give it to someone who needs it more than I do, because I don't really need it, but somebody does. So I cut my hair recently because it was time to cut it, because it was long enough to cut and donate. But this time I just decided immediately after when I cut my hair that I will also shave my beard and leave a mustache, which I've never done before. And mostly just fearing legends is the main thing, because you've heard of Samson and how Samson will lose all his strength if you cut his hair. And so I figured I can get around this. If I cut almost all the hair on my head and all the hair on my face, but I leave a mustache, I can maintain all the strength that I've built up over the years. And I think I could cheat the system, and then I won't fall to the legend of Samson losing his hair and losing his strength. So I mostly kept my mustache out of fear of just losing everything I've worked for, but it turns out that it just looks absolutely incredible. And I get private messages multiple times a day about it now. And apparently when I do a podcast, the most important questions to ask me are now about my facial hair. So just know it's because I'm a superstitious person and I'm afraid of losing my strength. And I figured if I save some of my hair, I can at least save some of my strength.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. I had no idea that he donated. I did know that he used to do some modeling. If you guys look, scroll back on Instagram, you'll see like the Hunter model pictures. He's like a baby.
Oh, man.
So
don't scroll back. Don't scroll back.
You can see us if you want.
Yeah, that's before I ever grew my hair out for the first time. If you want to see me clean cut, no facial hair, looking like 30 years younger with no facial hair and almost no hair on my head, just a buzz cut like a kid from New York, like I really was a kid from New York who just moved to Cali. Those pictures are out there, and only like once every 4 to 5 years do I get brave enough to post a throwback that brings up that time in my life.
I love it. I love it. Change.
Absolutely.
It's inevitable. Growth. Evolution. I love it. There you have it, folks. I'm going to let Hunter run because he's a busy man, but he was kind enough to hop on and answer your question about the hair and the mustache. Thank you again, Hunter.
You're so welcome. Talk soon.
Talk soon. So, Mr. Hunter, is there anything that you would like to leave the people with?
I don't have enough hours of your time to give them everything I want to give
them. He talks.
Them.
You hear this guy? He talks.
I talk. I do talk sometimes. Not in my videos on Instagram, but I do talk. I'm getting better at that. Really, I've said it so many times this episode already, but I think it'll make a big difference for people in the long run is if we stop treating everybody the same, start having a more critical thinking process. And here's a big one for me. Ask better questions. Ask some questions. Most people aren't asking any questions. But when you do ask questions, think about how to ask better questions. Start asking why. If you have mentors, if you have people in the field you look up to, ask them why more. If they should easily be able to answer that question if they believe in what they're doing. If not, start to ask better questions as to why they can't answer those first questions. A lot of people are doing things in the industry, and this is fitness, this is therapy, this is rehab, this is massage, chiropractic, a lot of this sports. I deal with a lot of sports people. People do things based off of tradition, which means that there's not really any questions asked. It's just, well, my coach taught me this, and his coach taught him that, and her coach taught him this. So people do things because, well, this is just how it's done. This is how it's always been done. This is how we do things. Unfortunately, I don't think that's enough, because look at the state of our industry.
Yes,
the fitness industry,
exactly.
I think, is going in the wrong direction. The rehab industry is having a lot of trouble as well.
Exactly.
So I think if we can get people to ask better questions, go to more courses. Like I said, I'm not a therapist, but I go to therapy courses. If I could take one thing away from it, if I could learn one nugget of information, it was worth my my time and money is one of those things that I think people need to spend more time investing in themselves. I was also talking to Shante about how I always hire mentors of different disciplines.
That's awesome.
I'm constantly trying to hire people, not in the fitness world. I hire dance instructors, martial arts instructors, rehab professionals, business coaches, just so I could learn more and I could become a better human so that I know better questions to ask when problems happen, when things come up. And I don't think that can be stressed enough. Like I said, a lot of people just kind of stay in their own lane, which from a professional standpoint, you need to do, but from a learning standpoint, you don't. You could pull from so many different practices about how to become a better human. And if you become a better human, you help more people.
Yes, I love it. So much there that you guys know, you listen to my podcast, I hate that phrase, stay in your lane. I hate people lead with it. People should lead with what is your lane, not stay in your lane. I hate that. And I think PTs do that all the time to trainers and it's like a massage therapist. And it's like, that is terrible. Ask them what their lane is. Because if you've listened to this episode, you see how wide this man's lane is and how much knowledge he has. He's not going and putting his hands on people and breaking that scope, legal scope of things, but in terms of knowledge and understanding and what he can help you with, that lane is freaking, it's a highway. It's multiple lanes. So understand that. Second point before I wrap this up, all of what he just said can be summed up by the tattoo that he has on the inside of his right arm. What does that say, my friend?
Ancora Imparo.
And what does that mean? It's not Harry Potter.
Yet I am still learning, or always striving to learn more.
There you go. That's, if you take nothing else from this episode, always striving to learn more. It's never done. Hunter, if these folks want to find you, not in a creepy way, after you see his pictures, though, you're going to be like, yeah, skin that cat twice.
Shoulder keeps moving, doesn't it?
You guys go to that video. You'll see what I'm talking about. If they want to find you on social media, if they want to contact you, how can they do that?
Sure. I'd say where most people find me is Instagram, and that's at Hunter Fitness. Once again, my name is Hunter Cook.
Yes.
99% of people in my actual life, my friends and family, don't even know that sometimes. I get introduced at the courses as Hunter Fitness, not Hunter Cook. Yeah, it's just normal. You could also go to hunterfitness.com. So I have a website that compiles some information as well. I believe my Facebook is also Hunter Fitness. There's a theme here. maybe it's my fault that people know me as this.
Right?
but primarily, and most people know me on Instagram. Or if you want a little more detailed information about me, you can go to my website. And you can contact me on either of those if you have any questions about any of the things that we talked about.
Awesome. I will put that in the show notes for you guys. If they're interested in an FRC course, we're learning more about that.
Sure.
How can they do that?
Sure. The FRC main webpage is functionalanatomyseminars.com. And through that portal, you're going to find access to different seminars. There's FR, FRC, FRA, KinStretch. FRC is the main one we talked about today. That's the training modality. And then you would look through. There's a lot of information. You could just learn about it a little bit. Or if you want to see dates of upcoming courses, what states and what countries we're in, you'd click on Become a Provider under FRC and then scroll down to the dates that say FRC. And then you'll see where we're teaching around the world.
And does it say when you're teaching on, let's say, the instructors?
It doesn't, but if you let me know which one you're thinking about attending and you message me, I'll let you know if I'll be there. There are some times where we're teaching 3 or 4 FRCs in one weekend. I'm always at one of them, but I'm not at the other three. So,
clearly.
I will let you know which ones I'm at. And as more open up, I like to share on my Instagram which ones I'm teaching, so I'll post on my page as well.
Perfect. So I'll put all of that in the show notes for you guys. It's a course I recommend. I get asked this question a lot. And that's part of the reason I brought Hunter on. But honestly, I brought him on because I wanted you just to hear him. But I have taken the course. If you reach out and ask questions, I can tell you about it too. I have taken it. I absolutely do recommend it. I've only taken the FRC course, so I can only speak to that. But I absolutely do recommend it. Hunter, thank you for driving up here.
You're so welcome.
Thanks for
I had a blast.
This is great, right? Thanks for coming for lunch. Thank you for sharing yourself with the audience.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. It's been a really good episode. So, you guys out there, I thank you for listening. I know you could have done anything else, but you chose to listen to us while we sat here and chatted from the beautiful Redondo Beach. Actually, we're technically in Hermosa. It's amazing. The palm trees. But I
every
digress.
Interview I do from now on has to
right?
be on this bench.
You guys. Palm trees, blue sky, the beach is right behind us. So I thank you for spending your time with us. You guys are the best. Until next time, my friends, Hunter and Maestro, out.